Welcome to episode 4 of Red Flags Rising. My name is Mike Konecki. I'm the co-chair of the Sanctions, Export Controls, and AML practice at Hughes, Summit & Reed. With me is Brent Carlson, a director at the Berkeley Research Group. Brent, welcome back. How are you doing?
Excellent. Thanks, Mike. Glad to be here.
Brent and I are going to continue a bit of a series that we started with the last episode, where we look back at blog posts that we did for the NYU Program on Corporate Compliance and Enforcement. This one in particular is about penalties for export control violations and trends that we see in that space. This is clearly an article titled by Brent, From Peanuts to Prison Time, A Fresh Look at the Evolution of Export Controls Penalties. Brent, why did you write this article?
So basically, this was an article that I wrote comparing the top 10 penalties for the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act compared with top 10 penalties for export controls violations. What I noticed is that we came out of that FCPA world, the numbers just didn't compare. In the export controls world, with the signals that are out there, there's only one way for the penalties for export controls to go, and that's up. In 2023, we had Seagate's $300 right. million penalty. There was this big anticipation of penalties going up. And one of the things I thought was helpful was to compare the top 10 penalties between the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, the FCPA, which drove white-collar enforcement for 20 years, with what has been characterized as the new FCPA, Export Controls and Sanctions. So, in a nutshell, they don't compare. I think these are some signals that came out of the remarks that Secretary Lutnick gave at the BIS update conference a couple of weeks ago, where he said, really look at your KYC, know your customer, and your KYCC, know your customer's customer. I think that's going to be the focus. The other thing that we've talked about before is the Siemens FCPA case. That was cited in the Senate PSI Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations report at the end of December 2024. It was December 18th that came out. And it described that Siemens FCPA case. By the way, for those out there, this is ancient history. If you don't know about the Siemens FCPA case, it's from 2008. But it's an example of what happened with the FCPA. The Senate's report cites that case where prior to the Siemens FCPA settlement, the highest penalty for FCPA violation was $44 million. Siemens then brought that from $44 million up to $1.6 billion total. So that was a game changer. And I think we're looking at that again.
Why do we expect to see a jump? Why do these penalties really matter from the perspective of compliance? Penalties drive the value proposition for companies when they're deciding what to invest in compliance efforts. And it doesn't mean that they're bad people or that anybody wants to violate export controls. For a company of any size, the board of directors, management, compliance are constantly facing a barrage of risks. Time is finite, resources are finite. So boards and management have to triage constantly. The potential for fines and penalties and real impact on future business flows drives legal compliance efforts. Whether that's with the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act that we both know well from the past, whether that's with export controls today, that's going to be one of the questions that the board and management are going to ask. So, Brent, your chart in this article is super interesting because it paints a really stark contrast from before the Seagate resolution in April of 2023 about what the expected cost would be of an export controls violation compared to an FCPA violation.
If I took Seagate, Odebrecht is 11.8 times higher. The penalties for that is 11.8 times higher. That's at the top of the chart. And so even with the ZTE, ZTE was about one third of the size for Odebrecht. So it was still significantly smaller. On the bottom, the FCPA penalty was 406 times higher than the number 10 spot for export controls.
Brent, there was an article in Export Compliance Daily recently by Ian Cohen, where Jeffrey Kessler made some statements. Now, in fairness to him, the statements were a little bit less on the record and more surreptitiously recorded, according to the article. All of that put aside, they signal very clearly more might be coming. So, Brent, let's walk through what that reporting revealed and what that means for trade compliance.
Yeah, this report recapped an internal meeting at BIS. Jeff Lee Kessler, the new head of BIS, was making some comments. Some of these comments, they're almost designed for the public. They should be public, really. In a sense, it's signaling to the world that these are our priorities and this is what's coming. Let's get to the penalties. I think it's very interesting where you've got Jeffrey Kessler now saying, quote, time is running out. This goes back to our thing about how costs drive compliance. He says, we want to focus on cases that are going to be a powerful deterrent to violating the rules. That's exactly it. It's really sort of setting out those cases that are going to be a deterrent. He says, sometimes I use a word massive, a massive increase in enforcement to have that deterrent effect. And the deterrent effect is coming down to the penalties.
Absolutely. And there is a risk that some people could look at the past 10, 20 years and question whether this is BIS crying wolf again. People with a lot of experience in this space say, okay, yeah, we get it, but we've seen and heard this before and nothing really happened, especially in terms of corporate enforcement. At some point, there may actually be a wolf, and certainly Seagate was a preview of that wolf. So, as a company trying to prepare for these things, you have to anticipate that a new Secretary of Commerce, a new head of BIS, are going to feel committed to these statements. Another thing to pull out of this article is that, according to the internal meeting that Kessler had with BIS staff, he explained that one of the agency's highest priorities will be focusing on, quote, high impact, including high dollar value cases, especially involving companies illegally diverting export control technology to China, U.S. companies who are trading with the distributors and the resellers whom the U.S. suspects of engaging in smuggling or diversion, will need to be prepared, whether it's a friendly visit in the outreach context from BIS, whether BIS says, wait a second, we're going to pull in the FBI as well, whether it's an unfriendly visit. Any of these things expose the company to potential risk. Whatever information your people, your agents, your counterparties tell the BIS officials, FBI officials, is going to be information that the US government has. And certainly they may exercise some discretion to pick winners and losers, but you don't want to be on the losing side of that. So you should make sure that people who would interface with U.S. government officials, even if the target of the investigation is somebody in a faraway place, know the seriousness and the consequences of the statements that are being made. We see all the time instances where the suspected crime ends up not being the basis for penalties or even jail time for individuals, but instead the cover-up or the perceived cover-up. It's very important to take very seriously any type of outreach, even if initially it seems like you are not the focus of what the U.S. government is looking at.
Just expanding on that a little bit, one of those signals that came out of the update conference of KYCC, Know Your Customer's Customer, I think that's going to be an issue. And this is where we get into our discussions on the high probability standard on being able to address that through those distributor and reseller chains.
Totally, Brent, in the challenge of the high probability standards we discussed previously is that it's not scientific. High probability is not 72.5%. High probability is somewhat unfairly what the government thinks it is, based on guidance that the government has given you and statements that the government has made. We've seen media reports recently, for example, of pressure being put by the US government onto the government of Malaysia in particular, to provide assurances that sensitive items installed on sites or at sites in Malaysia stay there. And if that's the stated end use and end location, that the Malaysian authorities don't turn a blind eye when the data center is actually disassembled overnight and everything goes north to China. Howard Lutnick has talked about using tariffs not just to restore trade balances or to address imbalances in trade, but also to punish other countries who undermine U.S. national security objectives, including through smuggling or diversion in violation of U.S. export controls. We've seen this already with the announcement of, and really the creation, Brent, of secondary tariffs for anyone continuing to purchase oil from Venezuela. So it's, you know, they are using the entire toolbox and using it aggressively.
I like the last quote in this article. It says, "We want to use all the tools in the toolbox to achieve real outcomes for America, and not slowly. We want to do it now." I think that says it right there. And we go back to what we've been talking about with the high probability standard. That's going to allow BIS enforcement to bring more cases, resolve them quicker, and bring higher penalties. And you're looking at penalties that could be 2x or twice the value of the transactions. And that adds up very quickly. That's where you can get not so much peanuts to prison time anymore, but peanuts to elephant-sized penalties.
Right, your comment there, Brent, about maybe not prison time reflects a little bit of uncertainty about the role of the National Security Division of the Department of Justice and whether export controls and sanctions enforcement remain a priority for them because certain people with certain titles have been reassigned within the Department of Justice. If you look at activity and you look at enforcement activity and you look at statements, it's not that they've given up entirely on this area of law. It would be foolhardy to assume now that they will turn down cases that are sitting right in front of them. It may be that you see a reversal of the traditional role of the DOJ in other areas where here maybe you have Secretary Lutnick's Commerce Department and Jeffrey Kessler's BIS being seen more out front, whether they're actually taking the lead or not, but really being seen more as the driving agency. With DOJ coming behind them to bring criminal prosecutions where they think they have evidence to show the willful element that they need to show in order to bring criminal cases for export controls violations. But there are still people in the National Security Division responsible for this area of law. They've continued to announce cases against individuals. It may not be as visible and as vocal as the Commerce Department is right now, but that's out there as well. Brent, back yet again by popular demand, is Brent Carlson's Managing Up. Sitting here in April of 2025, looking back at the November 2023 From Peanuts to Prison Time blog post that we did, if you are a trade compliance professional today, what can you take from this article to help you manage up? Especially in terms of accurately describing the value proposition for trade compliance today.
For today, we're going to go to an old Chinese folk saying, "Sha ji jing ho, sha ji jing ho." You kill some chickens to frighten the monkeys. This saying comes from the Book of Changes, the I Ching, which is a classical text in the Chinese literary canon. It dates back to around the 9th century BC. It refers to a story of a warning given to soldiers who are showing up late.
Brent, what happened to the soldiers who were showing up late?
Well, some got beheaded, along with a horse or two. Along the way, the story evolved into chickens. The new administration, Secretary Lutnick and Jeffrey Kessler, they're giving clear signals that they're going to send a message on here. Don't be a chicken. We don't want to be that chicken. They're going to pick winners and losers. You don't want to be those one that's going to be the poster child for deterrence. So take some steps now. Start planning now. Start with a risk assessment in terms of where potential exposure could be from the high probability standard perspective, because that's what they're going to leverage on this. Create a high probability protocol for how that's going to be incorporated into the export controls compliance program, and then test it. Make sure that it's being driven through the enterprise as well. But don't be the chicken.
Many companies already have done some sort of assessment of their risk. The key is, does your risk assessment incorporate the high probability standard of awareness, which finds itself in many important aspects of the EAR and has till today not been really fully appreciated? When you're talking about the risk, it's a risk of enforcement for those elements of the EAR that turn on knowledge, like the end use and end user controls, FDP rules. Are you building into your analysis that aspect of it? Well, Brent, that concludes episode 4 of Red Flags Rising. Much, much more to come. It was a pleasure as always. Be well.
Be well. Thanks, Mike.